Blog Talk Radio.
And Joe Stasek coming your way. Callous remarks. We definitely mentioned Steve Callous and Joe Stasek every Tuesday, 5:30 here on Blog Talk Radio, talking NFL Week One, talking a little baseball too as the wild card race gets heated up a little bit as we are approaching the final weeks of the baseball season. Steve Callous joining me shortly. Big week in the NFL thus far, of course. I think the rookies and or first-timers stole the show as they did this past Sunday, beginning with your team, your town, if you live in the Delaware Valley or in the vicinities. How about that Carson Wentz? Carson Wentz, first time out, took 29 snaps in the preseason, busted rib and all. He gets the start. He was the third-string quarterback about a week before game one kickoff, and he basically went out there and looked like a wily, cagey veteran, 22 of 37, 278, two touchdowns, no interceptions, with a quarterback rating of 101. He looked as good as at least Howie Roseman had advertised. Again, it's only game one. It was the Browns. I thought the Browns would come out with a little better showing than that. Hugh Jackson did not have a great game. RG3 looked as rusty as RG3 might look after certainly an up-and-down career since his rookie season in 2010, where he was the NFC Offensive Rookie of the Year. Steve, are you with me? Not with me quite yet? All right, we're waiting for Steve Callous. He will be calling in very shortly, of course. As I was saying, the Eagles took it to the Browns. They won by 19 points, and they are 1-0 heading into Chi-Town next Monday night. A little bit more of a test. Chicago, certainly nothing to write home about, but is on the road. It's a nationally televised game, and week two for Carson Wentz. We'll see how he performs. Of course, the opening game, in fact, the kickoff classic, if you will, the NFL's version, the Thursday before the Sunday, that was Cam Newton and the runner-ups to the Denver Broncos, the world champions. Cam Newton, the NFL MVP. Head-to-head with, how about that, Trevor Siemian? That's right, Trevor Siemian, seventh-round pick out of Northwestern in 2015. Who would you like there on paper going into that matchup? Well, let me tell you, that's why the NFL is certainly what it is. Steve Callous, I believe you are with me now. I got no Steve Callous. Let me see if I can get Steve Callous popped up. Steven, are you there, my friend? How about... Yeah, we're having some technical difficulties. Steven, are you there? Right now. How about now? Steven, are you there, my friend?
I sure am. Good to be with you, Joe.
There he is, my man. See, I wanted to create some hype and a crescendo to bring you in, my friend, because you are the star of this show. How are you, my friend?
Well, I'm doing well. I think it was the shock of the year that Carson Wentz played well and Siemian played well. Jimmy Garoppolo played well. Very unusual for guys in their first start, as you know, to play so well. And I think, obviously, if you're a betting man, that probably hurt some of your picks. I did want to go back to Carolina because, as we talked about last week, I certainly like Carolina. Now, the first thing I'll say is that Cam Newton, and look, he was hit four or five times in the head, called once, but even that was an offsetting penalty. And I think the problem was Cam Newton, and look, he might have been out of it. You know, you haven't really heard, did he go through the concussion protocol? Some people say yes, some people say no. Certainly to me, he looked dazed, but he reminded me, and you'll remember this, he reminded me of Donovan McNabb in that Super Bowl against the Patriots where you were screaming at the TV, if you're a Philly fan, get to the line, hurry up. So too with Carson Palmer. I remember, Cam Newton. I remember one time he got up off his knee, the clock was running down, he got to the line with like 3 seconds left and they had to waste a timeout. So there was something wrong there. But look, you got to give credit to the Broncos. they're going to be what they were. Remember, Peyton Manning was terrible last year, and Brock Osweiler was good, maybe. He wasn't great, and they won the Super Bowl. It looks like that's the same plan, and C.J. Anderson was unbelievable. When he played against the Patriots last year, he ran around them like they were standing still. He did the same thing this week against Carolina.
Yeah, I was surprised at the Broncos. I'm really surprised at the poise of these first-timers or rookies. You know, Trevor Siemian, technically, he took one snap. It was a kneel down last year. So
right,
okay.
We know what
so,
you mean, though.
This is his first time out. Jimmy Garoppolo's been around for a while. First time out, really, with serious action. And Dak Prescott was very good in the preseason. Still hasn't thrown a pick. Didn't throw a touchdown the other day either. But coming along, and Carson Wentz, I mean, usually these first-timers, these rookies, they get into a lot of trouble. In fact, if you look, if you go up and down the list, Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott, Garoppolo, and Trevor Siemian, between them, only two picks, and they all came from Siemian. That was a pretty impressive showing. But you mentioned the Cam Newton thing. The NFLPA has launched a, quote, investigation, and the NFL did the same thing. They're not working in unison with this investigation, but they're investigating the lack of concussion protocol. Steve, I know you're a lawyer. I don't know if this is within your jurisdiction, but what exactly are they investigating? He obviously got knocked around six or seven times. Maybe they should investigate the lack of penalty flags, because these were direct hits. And if you're questioning his awareness late in the game, I mean, I think you could probably look towards that. He said he didn't remember some of the things that were happening late in the game. What do you make of that?
Does he not get
the courtesy, because he's such a big guy?
You don't have to be a doctor to look at this guy towards the second half and say something's not right there. But
right.
I think the investigations go to the actual protocol, the protocol being not just your trainer on the sidelines, but now an independent guy on the sidelines who is supposed to come and examine these guys.
Right.
They showed Palmer on the sideline. They showed Newton on the sidelines a few times. I didn't see him being looked at really by anyone. That doesn't mean he wasn't, but I think the investigation is going to – look, the protocol is very clear now. This is not – you're feeling okay? Oh, my bell got rung.
Mm-hmm,
I'll go back
sure.
in there. You're a tough guy. So there's a very specific protocol that has to be followed, and I think they should be able to tell whether it was followed. I can tell you, and you know this, the NFL and the NFL Players Association, I think, have two different agendas. The NFL wants everything to work smoothly with the protocol, where the NFL Players Association wants to make sure the player was protected. He certainly, Newton, was not protected on the field, and now the open, because no penalties were called. But now the question is, was he protected off the field? And I'll say it again, I'm not a doctor, but when you looked at his eyes during that second half, there were times where you thought, what's he thinking? Is he thinking? And certainly it looked like something should have been done. On the field, they're going to warn the refs more. If there's anything close this week, you can bet it's going to change in a week, that they're going to tell the refs, look what happened to this guy. You know, last week, we got to protect these guys, and anything close to a hit now, I think if anything, next week we'll be talking about overcalls where they just kind of made up for this past week.
Well, I think it's inexcusable, because they usually err on the side of, you know, you call it what you want, pansy football, but, I mean, Cam was getting blasted and nothing. Does that go to the fact that he's, you know, a big guy, 6'4", and he's usually battling over defenders?
Here's the analogy, and that's what I was thinking during the game. But Ron Rivera said it after. He said, it's like Shaquille O'Neal. Shaquille O'Neal is a monster. You remember when he was at his peak, they'd hang on his arms. They beat him. And a lot of times they wouldn't call. You know, he could carry a guy, you know, Will Chamberlain, if you go back far enough. He can carry a guy in his arm and still dunk. And I think it's almost a natural thing for referees in basketball. The big, strong guy. It really didn't bother him. Yeah, he got hit, but he scored, so we won't call it. I think so, too, in football. Now, Cam Newton, whatever you think of him, is, I think, the biggest, strongest, most athletic guy in terms of dealing with hits. But, again, what you said before, not hits to the head. They should trip over themselves to protect him, no matter how big and strong he is. But, yes, I think that was a factor.
And real quick before we move on, say they find some negligence with the protocol, these investigations – what happens? Does someone get suspended?
Interesting.
I mean,
if, for example, the independent guy who comes in to look, I mean, you can either I don't know if you suspend them or get another guy, because they have to have these guys at every game. In terms of trainers and doctors on the bench, which all teams have now in the NFL, you know, I've argued for years they should have them in college and even high school because of the concussion issues, because that's where kids are really getting hurt who aren't even playing in the NFL. But you have to look at the guys who are supposed to do whatever it was they were supposed to do. Are you going to get honest testimony on the sidelines? I don't know. Is a guy from Carolina going to say, yeah? Right. So it is a problem. You know, should the NFL have cameras on the sidelines at all times? I don't know, but the NFL should have a spotter. And I thought there was a spotter up in the box upstairs who's looking at a guy like Cam Newton when he comes off the field. He'd be an obviously guy to target if you're watching from the stands, because everybody in the stadium and on national TV saw what happened.
No, I agree. Let's get back to Philly for a little bit. This town is blowing up. I know you're up in New York, but around here it's overreaction Monday. Well, now it's overreaction Wednesday. I get it. Everyone's excited. It looks like they might have a quarterback here in town. Big, strong guy, big arm. He was very poised, a couple of touchdowns, no picks. There was a Bobby Hoying thing about 15, 20 years ago. This isn't Bobby Hoying. This was a good start. What did you make of it, and do you take anything away from it because they played the Browns?
I take a little bit away from them for a few reasons. As we talked about last week, this is a weak division. I mean, the Giants beat Dallas in Dallas. You know, Carson Wentz now looks like a quarterback after 1 week. Dak Prescott looks like a quarterback. I told you, in my view, the weakness of the quarterback position there made this a wide-open division. Now, after watching Kirk Cousins, who we talked about it last week, 69.8% completion rate. Well, he wasn't very good the other day. If anything, I give the Giants the edge. I'm a Giants fan, but I pick Washington to win the division, because now with Victor Cruz back, the Giants have an incredible passing offense. Their offensive line played a little better. That's a weakness that looks a little better this year. And so they certainly have a chance to do some damage. I would say, look, the Browns, I almost feel bad for the Browns. I told you, my son went to college in Cleveland for 4 years. We followed the Browns, and they're in the wrong division. And now RG3, who needs to take sliding lessons from Russell Wilson,
right?
I'm sorry. The notion that he didn't see the guy just go down. Don't run out of bounds. There was a guy right there. You had to have a feel. And, boy, what a hit he took. And this isn't college. You can't run into these guys. A guy like RG3 is going to be in trouble his whole career if his career continues, because he's been knocked around so many times now, and it happened again. So, yeah, if I'm an Eagles fan, which I'm not, I take something good out of this, but it's really because of the strength of my division that I think I have a chance. And, oh, by the way, it looks like they have a quarterback.
They do, and, you know, Cleveland just won a championship with LeBron. So I don't feel too bad for them, but, I mean, since 99 when they came back in the league, they've had 26 different starting quarterbacks, RG3, 16 with RG3 since 2011. They pass on Carson Wentz, and we talked about
right.
De Podesta earlier last show, saying he didn't think Wentz was going to be a franchise quarterback. And I know it's early, but they got a good look at this guy now. He torched them. They pass on him. They went with the kind of a retread reclamation project. He's on IR now for half the season. I mean, if I'm a Cleveland fan, I'm banging my head against the wall right now.
Well, I feel bad for the Browns fans. And, again, I got to know a lot of them. They live and die with this team. And as great as it was that the Cavaliers won, and that was great, and maybe the Indians can make a run this year, that'll be great. To me, and I spent a lot of time there in the last 5 years because my son worked there a year after college, it's a football town. Football rules the roost there. And after watching this, and I've said it for 5 years, they're in the wrong division. Even if they were good, we were talking about teams who are on the upswing. To me, you have to be in the right division to be on the upswing. And, you know, with the Steelers looking like the Steelers, the Browns are just, you know, the Ravens look like they might be back. Who the heck knows? But the Browns, frankly, they're simply in the wrong division. And I don't know when or if it's going to get any better, because now, you know, they're going back to Josh McDown now, 37 years old. I mean, they don't have a choice. But the notion that they're going to compete in that division is just, you know, frankly, not really going to happen.
Oh, that's rough, the notion of Josh McKay. Listen, it could be worse. It could be Johnny Manziel. He's back in school right now. He's back at Texas A&M, I guess, working on his degree. I mean, at least he got himself cleaned up, I think. You mentioned the Steelers last night. They go into the Redskins. their turf. They whacked him around pretty good. Antonio Brown, you know, rough shot, 8 catches, 126. Ben Roethlisberger looks in preseason form. You think it's the Steelers' year to make the jump to the next level and get back to where they were a couple years ago?
I do.
Or the Redskins just that bad last night?
Washington was really bad, but I do think the Steelers are legit. You know, they have the best wide receiver in football. I think that's undisputed. You know, there's all this talk about should Josh Norman have been over there on Antonio Brown. And personally, I think the answer is yes. You know, I don't know. Now, Antonio Brown said after the game that Norman wanted to cover him the whole game. I have no idea if Norman said that to him, if that was true, if he was just being nice.
Sure.
But the reality of it all is, if you have a guy, and look, Richard Sherman's the same way. If you have a guy who says, I want to be over there, well, that's a problem when you're on one side and all the action. Now, look, 4th and 1, do you think they're throwing a bomb into the end zone? Unlikely, although, you know, Tomlin does that, Big Ben does that, and I thought the coverage was okay. It was a perfect throw. The safety was late getting over, but again, it's 4th and 1. He's looking for the run. So I think you have to have – well, I like the way the Patriots did it with Revis. You know, they put Revis – Revis never played the best receiver on the other side when he was with the Patriots.
No, he always played the number 2, and then they doubled the number 1.
Exactly, and I kind of like that because if you had a safety on Brown on those deep throws, I don't see how he catches them if you just cheat the safety over. There's a lot, but do I think the Steelers are for real? I do, but I do want to talk for a minute, if I could, on the number 1 team in football after 1 week, and it has to be the New England Patriots. Now,
I was just going to go there.
But I'm giving you,
or what?
I'm giving you the MVP that nobody gave you in the country. The MVP of the first game of the year for the Patriots beating Arizona is Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach, because they brought him out of retirement after 2 years.
Yep.
And I'm just going to go quickly. Look, nobody talks about lines. We really should. But in this game, the Patriots started 2 rookie guards. Their 2 starting tackles are injured. Vollmer on the left side is a very good tackle. Solder is a good tackle. They started Cameron Fleming and Marcus Cannon. And just so you have a thought of who these guys are, Cameron Fleming was ranked 29th out of 32 in tackles last year on the left side. Marcus Cannon was ranked 27th on the right side. In other words, you can't get much worse. Yet, Scarnecchia has taken this group – and David Andrews at center, who was ranked 20th last year. So they have 3 starters who played last year in the NFL, none of whom were ranked higher than 20th at their position. And they started 2 rookie guards. And the good news is Garoppolo is fleet of foot. He's better than Brady's going to be. But I think what the job that this guy did to give Garoppolo a chance and give Garoppolo a lot of credit, but I think everybody who follows the Patriots, yes, no Gronk, yes, no Brady, yes, no Ninkovich, but the real Patriots guys were going, oh, my goodness, no Vollmer. Oh, my goodness, no Solder.
Right.
Who are these tackles? And I'll just give you one final quick one on the line. Last year when Cameron Fleming was going to play left tackle, the blind side, as you know, Tom Brady made a statement. And you're not going to say anything bad about your players, but Tom Brady said, if Fleming is playing, that means we have a lot of injuries. That shows, I mean, that's as bad a thing you're going to get from Tom Brady. So the point is, with a line, 2 rookies, 3 guys who were not very good at all last year, it was like this guy Scarnecchia takes people out of the stands and makes them into a cohesive line. It's really a miracle. And I would say this to you, even if that field goal was good, even had they lost, I would put Patriots right to the top now because they're going to be 3-1 or 4-0. Everybody, including me, thought they would lose to Arizona. So I'm naming – I might write an article on this at stevecowles.com tomorrow, but I'm naming Dante Scarnecchia as the MVP of the Patriots for week 1 this year.
I love that. I love that. And, again, we'll get to the six-pack, the plays that we gave out. I gave out Arizona. And, you know, my one rule is don't ever bet against the Patriots, and I broke my own rule. You give Belichick 7 months to prepare for a game? Yeah, that's what you get. So I would agree with you. They're still in the upper echelon. Brady's coming back in 2 weeks. He's probably just chilling, and he gets some rest, and he'll be fine when he comes back, and they'll be fine until he comes back. But let's go to the bottom of the barrel. The team who gave up like 9 first-round picks to draft Jared Goff didn't dress them. They go into Frisco the other night. Frisco, no one thinks anything of Frisco. They got Chip Kelly. They got no weapons anymore. Their defense all retired a few years ago. 28-0. Jeff Hecker, like 13 punts in the game for the Rams. He probably saw more action than anybody. And they were just dreadful last night. Your thoughts on how bad the Rams were in their debut in L.A., even though
It's hard to believe how bad they were. And I thought, now look, they're in a tough division. So we could talk about them getting better, but they're in the wrong division. They're like Cleveland. They're better than Cleveland, I think. But they're in the wrong division. It's going to be a long season for them. And, you know, what are they thinking now? Carson Wentz steps in and plays like a first-round draft pick, and their guy wasn't even active, right? He was the number three quarterback. What I was shocked at.
Jeff Hecker, the puncher, was going to be the emergency quarterback. They needed him.
Amazing. What I was shocked at was their defense, and the 49ers gashed them in the running game. And that, I mean, they were unbelievable, their front seven last year, and have pretty much the same group back this year. So that was the biggest shock to me, that Carlos Hyde was just unbelievable. Look, Carlos Hyde is a good running back, don't get me wrong. But the notion that they could run against this front seven was just shocking to me. Now, Case Keenum can't throw the ball forward. You know, it looks like he has to throw it sideways. But, you know, they even got pressure. They even got pressure on him. You don't expect much. But once they gang up on Gurley, where are they going? You know, the same thing happened in Minnesota. They're going to have to get Bradford in there because AP, 19 rushes, 31 yards. They still won, though. The Rams, once they shut down, once Gurley couldn't run, Case Keenum couldn't throw the ball down the field. I don't think Sean Hill really can. He's certainly a stopgap. The rumors are no starter named yet. Again, we tape this Tuesday evening. No starter yet, but the rumor is that Sam Bradford is going to start. And, of course, they won't announce it because they want you to prepare for two QBs.
Of course.
But those two instances, the problem with the running back, and again, only 200-yard rushes the first week, which shows you how far the running back has fallen. But the problem with even the good running back, Gurley, AP, is if you want to stop him, you can. And then you better have a guy who can throw the ball. A lot of teams have guys who can throw the ball, so you can get some rushing yards. But if you're I got a great runner and I might have trouble passing the ball, which Minnesota was, even though they won, and clearly which the Rams are, you know, again, I don't know, Goff must be pretty bad to not even be active. I understand patience, and I generally agree with it, but after what you saw, are the Rams going to win five games if they stay with this lineup? So it's going to be quick for Jeff Fisher. I don't know. You know, there are people talking about giving him an extension. I don't know how that works. It was 100 years ago when he was in the Super Bowl. And I think generally he's a good coach, but their defense collapsed. And to me, that was more surprising than their lack of offense.
You mentioned Jeff Fisher. You know, I like him. He was a defensive guy here back in the day. And, yes, you're right. Last time he was prominent was like 99-2000 when they played the Rams in that Super Bowl. He seems like the Teflon coach. He has bad teams, and sometimes they get worse, and sometimes they don't get much better even when they get high draft picks. He's still coaching. He's still a head coach. What do you think of that? How does Jeff Fisher do that?
It's kind of – look, all I can – and look, I've been – I don't want to say I'm a Rams supporter, but certainly, again, in the wrong division, they've beaten Seattle a few times in the last few years. So you look at them and they go, my goodness, they beat the Seahawks, and they're like one of the top three or four teams in football the last three years. I think they beat them three of the last four or something. So you look at that and you say, well, maybe we should give this guy a chance. Maybe we can get him a quarterback. Oh, we got him a quarterback. Oh, we didn't get him a quarterback. You know, and now you have a guy like – Aaron Donald, maybe the best football player that most people don't know, might be one of the best defensive players in the league, but he totally loses his mind yesterday, and he gets thrown out of the game, and it was such a crushing defeat to a team that's supposed to be terrible.
Yes.
So
terrible.
I really think, look, you don't want to overreact after one game. I totally agree with that. But I would put the Patriots right to the top after beating Arizona on the road with nobody. And I would put the Rams at or near the bottom after being, frankly, manhandled by a team that nobody really thought, I think, would win more than six games.
Steve Callis and Joe Stasak, Sportsology, here for about another 20 minutes. Steve, you went high, you went low. You liked the Raiders last year. They're kind of the chic pick this year, and, you know, they beat the Saints. Drew Brees had one of his normal days, 400 yards throwing, four touchdowns. I mean, he was phenomenal. Brandon Cooks and all of those guys. They score late. They go for two. What did you think of that move going for two, Jack Del Rio, there at the end?
Well, I think it's pretty gutsy, but I think obviously it was based on the we didn't want to leave it to a coin flip. We know if they got the ball, they were going to go down the field and probably score.
I kind of agree with that.
I think it's gutsy. If you asked me right before the play, were they going to do it, I would have said maybe. I actually got to see that live when it happened. And they had made a two-pointer on the other side on the previous play. You know, Cooper made a great catch on the right side. To tie up the game. And then, of course, Crabtree made a great – I mean, these are great catches these guys are making, so it easily could have gone the other way. But I think the thought was if we go to overtime and they either get the ball right away or we don't score when we get it, and we don't score a touchdown when we get it, then Drew Brees was just going to drive down the field. Again, when they were on offense, and this has not been New Orleans last year, as you recall. They used to be unbeatable at home. They've just been so-so the last couple of years. But it looked like the Drew Brees and Saints of yesteryear. And I think Del Rio thought, probably correctly, that whenever they got the ball, they were just going to march down the field. So I think he thought, am I going to score a touchdown if I win the – if I win the coin flip, and if I'm not, or I lose the coin flip, I better go for two. So, of course, it worked out great. Had it not worked out, he probably would have got slaughtered. But I think given the circumstances at the time, it was kind of a gutsy move by a coach. Maybe his defense was tired after giving up 423 passing yards, et cetera. But obviously it worked out for the better. But you know the world we live in now, Joe. You make it, you're a hero. You don't make it, you're a bum.
Of course. You're a goat, of course. And, you know, I'm looking around some of the scores, and it's only week one. I get it. Indianapolis loses at home to Detroit. KC getting walloped early to San Diego, 17-point comeback. Your thoughts on KC and any other notables or notable players or anything to watch for going into week two of this season?
Well, the Chargers did what the Chargers do. I mean, it's almost becoming like a habit with them. It's really bizarre to me that they could play so well within a game and then play so poorly, or play so well within a season and then lose five in a row. I mean, the Chargers are the Chargers of the Chargers. The Chiefs, more down to earth. They grinded it out. Give them credit. Andy Reid's a good coach. I think they've won, 11 straight regular season games. I might add, all without Jamal Charles, by the way. You know, Charles, they thought he was going to play, and he's not. They're not sure if he's going to play now. They have a good running game without him. Presumably, I think they'll be better with him, but they're winning without him, so you don't really have to rush him back. So I thought, you know, to have the lead like they did in Kansas City is unbelievable. But the Chargers can do that, 21-3, 27-10. But to give it all back and then lose in overtime, that's kind of a devastating loss. But I'll say, because I think the Chargers are better this year, I'll say because it was a road loss, it's not the end of the world. Obviously, you want to steal one on the road, like the Patriots did, for example, but it's not the end of the world. Had that game happened in San Diego, I'd really look far worse on the Chargers than anything else. I do want to talk, the one game I did want to talk about quickly was the Bengals and the Jets, and what a game that was. But you got to give, I'm not a Bengals fan at all, you know, they've lost 92 in a row in the playoffs. I'm kidding. I think it's only seven, but five with Marvin Lewis,
seven.
I think. And for the Bengals to go on the road and beat the Jets, and the Jets are very good. Can you imagine getting five sacks in the first half, seven in the game? You still lose the game. And the Jets didn't even have Sheldon Richardson, who was suspended for the first game. So the Jets are going to be impossible to run on. But they made enough plays. Andy Dalton, is he just a great regular season quarterback? I don't know, but clearly he hasn't won any playoff games. So I think the Bengals are kind of a false – if you think they're the favorite, I don't think you do. I think everyone thinks the Steelers are. But if you think the Bengals are the favorites to win that division after week one, I say no, even though they had a very good win. The other thing I wanted to say about the Jets is they have a brutal – I don't have their schedule in front of me, but they have a brutal first six games. And I said before the season on my other show, if they're 3-3 after six, they're fortunate. And after losing this game, they're not going to be 3-3 after six. And interestingly, besides their first six games, which are horribly tough games, they then have to play the Patriots twice in the last 10 weeks. So I think the Jets are in trouble. That's the reason I didn't pick them to make the playoffs. Yes, they were 10-6 last year, but they had one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. And this year I read somewhere they have the sixth or seventh toughest schedule in the NFL. And I think they're going to get killed early and they got the Patriots twice, you know, at the end, and that's eight very tough games. If they get four of those games, it's a miracle, and they might win all the others, but even that, you know, I see them as like a nine-win team maybe, so I think that's a problem. They needed that game the other day, and again, that's a home loss, and who would have thought, yep, if you could bet in Vegas, Joe, the Patriots would be alone in first place in the AFC East when they're playing Arizona and these other three teams are playing who they're playing. I bet you could have got 20-1 on that bet if you could bet something like that.
Yeah, the Jets go at Buffalo, at KC, home versus Seattle, at Pittsburgh, at Arizona, home versus the Ravens before they let up a little bit and play the Browns the day before Halloween. That is a tough road to hoe. Stevie, let's start real quick. Let's touch on college a little bit before we get to baseball. You mentioned Antonio Brown earlier, and what a night he had the other night. But his alma mater, Central Michigan, an interesting ending to the game at Oklahoma State, and you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
The extra play that they were allowed. Now, in a normal situation, that was one of the most ridiculous endings you'll ever see. The guy, the hook and ladder, when the guy's getting tackled, usually the hook and ladder is like a 15-yard over the middle. Guy
right.
comes across, catch and pitch. This was a bomb. The first
right.
you had to catch, then you had to throw back to a guy. It was an amazing play. But one that really should never have been allowed, and the SEC, the referee crew were suspended after the game because they let that play happen and really shouldn't have. And you can blame Mike, you know, Gundy, coach of Oklahoma State, can blame himself for that's fine, but that really should not have been allowed. And I don't know how that happens with a officiating crew of six guys.
Well, I think the wild card was the exception to the rule, as you know, normally. You would get an extra play in that situation. But if the penalty, and I'm not sure this is, maybe this is a distinction you can explain to me. The rule is you get an extra play in that situation unless the penalty that was called is loss of down. Since the penalty was called, did have a loss of down to it, there shouldn't have been an extra play. That was, you'll recall, the weird and strange to me intentional grounding where the quarterback just threw it 35 yards down the
threw
field out of bounds, except nobody bothered to run that way. Maybe they should have had a guy running deep at least. But I don't understand really the distinction, and maybe this is what confused the crew. I don't understand the distinction between allowing an extra play if there's no loss of down on the penalty and not allowing a play if there is a loss of down on the penalty. It was fourth down anyway, so there was no down to lose. So that's a very confusing thing to me, and obviously it confused Gundy, the coach. Obviously it confused the officiating, but it is kind of a weird thing, especially in the fourth down situation, Joe, because there was no down to lose. The other team would have gotten the ball had there been any time left. And again, if a guy had run a 10-yard out and the guy threw it 30 yards over his head from 10 yards, he should have thrown it 40 yards to the left instead of 40 yards down the field. So it's a very strange rule. And obviously a lot of people are looking at their rule books now, but I personally don't quite understand the distinction between giving you another play if the penalty doesn't have a loss of down and not giving you an extra play if there was a loss of down. It doesn't make sense to me. And we might see a change in that rule after the season's over. You just don't know. It's just bizarre.
Very bizarre. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, Houston, the Houston Cougars, they knocked off Oklahoma game one. They beat Lamar 42-0 last week. AP, they're 6 in the AP. Their schedule isn't that of like an SEC schedule the rest of the way. Cincinnati, Texas
right.
State, UConn, Navy,
yeah.
Tulsa, and that crew. If they run the table, which they very well could, they seem to be a pretty strong squad this year. Do they get in to the playoffs if they're that high over like an Oklahoma?
You know, I'm surprised they went all the way up to number six, but that puts them in a position to be certainly close to the top four or in the top four. I think the answer to that's going to be is how many guys above them lose. I don't know if like an Alabama loses one game, and based on what I've seen, I don't know that they're going to. They're heading, I was looking for a way to pick against them in the national championship. I hate picking the favorites, but Clemson showed me nothing the first 2 weeks.
Nothing.
I don't think anyone's going to beat Alabama, and I'm not an Alabama guy, but I think it's going to be a function of them going undefeated and other teams above them losing. not even just one game, maybe they'll have to lose two. But to jump up to six, you know, if they jumped up, they were 15. If they jumped up to 10 or 9, they'd have a bunch of teams to jump. But at six, they only have two teams to jump, and that'll be more a function of what the other teams do. But do I think they should be based on a win over Oklahoma in week one and a week schedule? No, that doesn't strike me as the kind of team that should be in the Final Four. But they might very well be there.
All right, Steve, let's wrap the NFL segment with a recap of our picks, which I'd rather not, but I'll go first. I went 1-2, and this is the reason why I don't bet anymore. I went 1-2, my only win. I actually thought it was a loss. I thought the Giants were laying 3, but it was a pick over Dallas. You reminded me of that. I had the Browns over the Eagles. That worked out. And then, of course, I bet against the only rule that I usually stay steadfast on is not taking anyone when they play the Patriots. And I did. I took Arizona. I went 1-2, and you did?
I went 1-2 as well. I did like Oakland, and they, you know, again, that's a miracle cover, but they had the guts to do it, and they did. Unfortunately, if you want the worst pick of the season, maybe, I like the Rams defense. I love the Rams defense, but after watching what I watched, I'll jump off that bandwagon, you know, quickly. And I also like Carolina, which, again, no excuses. Obviously, they didn't cover. But the whole Cam Newton concussion, look, if Cam Newton had to come out of the game, they weren't going to win. They did set up Gano for a game-winning field goal. That would not have been a cover, but a game-winning field goal nonetheless. So I think if some of those things were called earlier, maybe the last two wouldn't have happened. And that's the problem. That's bigger than did you win the game, did you lose the game, did you cover or not. That's really a bigger NFL problem and something they really have to look at. But it was only the first week. We'll do much better. We'll do much better this week.
Well, here's your opportunity to put your money where your mouth is. Your three plays this week.
Yeah, I'll be quick on these because I know you want to do a little baseball. But I like, after saying on air, you know, picking three road teams is not the smartest thing to do. And I did pick three road teams, and it wasn't the smartest thing to do. I'm going back to, like, the old-timers now. I'm going Broncos -6 over the Colts because I do like their offense, which Simeon looks like he's good, but C.J. Anderson was unbelievable. And I do think the Broncos defense is obviously going to shut down the Colts more than the other day. So I like Broncos -6 over the Colts. I'm on the Patriots bandwagon from before last week. I think that was a miracle victory. If anybody ever says they don't think Bill Belichick is a great coach, I think they should point to this game over almost any other game I can think of. So I'm going Patriots at home, Broncos at home, Patriots -4.5 over the Dolphins. And I hope this is allowed, Joe, but I'm going to go over under. Giants-Saints is going to be, I think, an incredible shootout. Not that Breeze is going to be as good on the road as he is in New Orleans. He's not. But I think Eli Manning's going to light up the Saints. And I think with Victor Cruz looking good, not great, along with Beckham, I think they're going to put a lot of points on the bet. Now, the over-under is 51.5, but I can see like a 35-27 game here. I like the Giants, but I'm not picking them with the points. But I like the over-under, over 51.5 Giants-Saints. How about you?
You know, I'm taking Washington to rebound. I like taking dogs. I'm not a big favorite player. I got Washington over the boys. I don't see them going 0-2. I see them getting their act together. And, again, they're playing against basically he's a rookie quarterback in Dak Prescott. I'll go skinnies -2.5 at home over the boys in a big division game. I'm going to touch that Saints-Giants game. Saints getting 5 points. I don't think the Giants should be giving 5 points to anybody, especially an explosive team like the Saints. I think the Saints could actually win that game outright. I'm not saying that, but I like the Saints plus the points at the Meadowlands. And until the Rams show me anything, I'm going to bet against them every week because last night I saw something I can rely on, I think, or hitch my wagon to. Maybe sometimes I'll look for that team who just lights it up for 16 games. But I also look for the dog, and the Rams look like the mutt of the league so far. And I am going with Seattle over them at Los Angeles -3.5. That's my I won't give it a 3-star play, but that's my those are my plays for this week. Until I get on the winning side of the ledger, I'm not going to count anything. But there's a little baseball before we wrap up, my friend. It's heating up a little bit. The wild card race is getting a little tight. Where do you you want to start? You want to start in New York? I mean, you're a big Yankees guy, another five games out of the Sox, and they're still somewhat striking distance, but they've gone on a run since A-Rod, you know, skip count. What are your thoughts on the Yanks?
Yeah, well, I think the Yankees, look, they've done a great job. I thought they waved the white flag a month ago. They traded everybody. I mean, it was unbelievable. But you know, Sanchez has been like a superstar for a month.
Unbelievable.
And give him a lot of credit. I don't think the Yankees can win the division. They were hoping they could make a run. They were three. They got as close as three, but now they're five out. They have a chance to make the wild card, but they still have to jump two teams as well. Their pitching is suspect. I think Boston, Cleveland, Texas are kind of it. Toronto and Baltimore are the first two, so they're all in the AL East. And the problem is Toronto, Baltimore, Yankees, and Boston are kind of playing each other, you know, with a respite to Tampa Bay once in a while. So I think it's going to be hard for the Yankees to climb that ladder. I think the Tigers might sneak in there now because they're only a game out of the wild card. And again, Toronto and Baltimore are ahead of them by one and two games respectively. And Detroit is one game ahead of the Yankees. So I think Detroit is going to sneak in there. I thought Toronto. Now, someone can win the East. You know, Boston's only a game up on Toronto. So we'll just have to see how that's going to work. But right now, I think the Yankees are out. And I'll go quickly to the National League. I think the Mets are going to get in because they have an easier schedule. Right now, San Francisco is the first wild card. The Mets are second. And the Cardinals are third. But the Cardinals have not been the Cardinals this year. They've played poorly lately. They're 5-5 their last 10. That's how the Mets got in. They're 7-3. That's how they got into the second wild card. So I think in New York, and I'm a Yankee guy, it hurts to say this, I think the Mets are in and the Yankees are out.
You mentioned the Dodgers. They seem to be a very, very sturdy. They're like the Peyton Manning of baseball. They have great regular seasons. They don't seem to get it done in the playoffs. You know, we talked about Clayton Kershaw a little bit last week.
He is the Peyton Manning. Clayton Kershaw is the Peyton Manning. I mean,
he's just awful
in the playoffs.
I made that comparison before.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on it? Can the Dodgers do anything when they get to the post this year? A couple former Phillies, Ruiz, Utley, Puig is back. You're talking the Dodgers. Are these the Bengals of baseball?
I just don't think the Dodgers are going anywhere. The reason they're going to win their division probably is because San Francisco has been horrifically bad, and San Francisco is still a game and a half up in the wild card as we tape. I think they're going to hold on. But no, I don't think that. Look, I thought Puig was an incredible five-tool player. I understand he's a little nutty. I understand he takes ridiculous chances, but he's played well since he came back. He made an unbelievable catch the other day to preserve the perfect game that they took Rich Hill out after seven innings. He made one of the greatest catches I ever saw. He made a diving layout catch going backwards. You just don't see people do that. He also hit a big home run the other night, but I just don't think they get there. I don't know what it is with Kershaw in the playoffs. I know it's mainly been the Cardinals who have destroyed him, but even without the Cardinals, he doesn't have a very good record. So, no, I don't think – look, I picked the Cubs before the season started. I know they were the hot pick. I know they went into that terrible slump, but now they're back being the Cubs. I think they have a big chance to win it all. And I think it was the Cubs over Cleveland I picked before the start because, again, I've watched the Indians for the last 5 years. And certainly Frank Cohn is a World Series winning manager. So those will be my picks. But I don't think the Dodgers are going to do much in the playoffs.
It's amazing. They rode Terry Francona out of this town on a rail because he couldn't manage his way out of paper bag. He went to Boston, wins a couple chips up there. And you know, now he's like the guy in Cleveland. Real quick, the champions. The last two World Series they were in, almost won back-to-back to get it done last year. What happened to the Royals this year?
You know, hard to imagine only five games over 500. I just don't know.
Amazing.
I mean, they were kind of a surprise last year, but not a shock. They were the up-and-coming team. In fact, didn't Sports Illustrated put something like your 2017 champions, the Royals, a couple of years ago, or 2016?
Yes.
But then they got good right away. So,
right.
You know, the problem in baseball today is it's about injuries, it's about pitching staffs, and they just haven't done it top to bottom in their pitching. I know we only have a few seconds left, so I'll throw it over to you, Joe.
Hey, Bob, my man, a great time this week. Appreciate it as always. I'm going to look for your picks. I'll think about you on Sunday. It's hard for me to really get into baseball. The last playoff game I saw was when Ryan Howard blew out his Achilles, which seemed like about 19 years ago at this point. That was about it in this town. Phillies are 16 games below five, and they're a very unentertaining 16 games below 500. You know, they scored like seven runs in an 11-game stretch like a few weeks ago at home.
Right.
Like lost like 10 games to the Braves, which, you know, the Braves have only won like 30 games all year. So it, baseball is kind of skipped town. It'll be back at some point. It'll be back. But right now it's all Eagles all the time. Steven, always a pleasure, my friend. We've got to go, but we'll catch you next week right here on Sportsology. Steve Callis and Joe Stazek. Thanks, my friend.